How are you?
Hot and annoyed and really want the burning sky ball to go away.
Oh, okay. Isn't it nighttime?
I don't care, it's still hot and unpleasant.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Well, that's summer for you.
Yeah,
The
well, I'm
same.
British. Well, I'm British. We're not used to having a summer.
Welcome back to Right Rings. This is episode 7, and my name is Greg.
And I'm Martin.
And yeah, we are, episode 7, if my count is correct. So it's welcome back, and the whole intro
Did
thing
you actually
was.
check that? Because last time we had a bit of a mental brain fart and we didn't know what actual on.
No, but I will check it now.
I think it's seven.
I think it's 7. We are jubileeing soon, so let me
Bloody
just
hell.
see. Yeah, it's 7.
Wow.
The magnificent 7. So if you're new to the podcast, then welcome. We are two writers who talk about writing stuff. And creative things. So we sincerely hope that everything that we say here that's useful, which mostly comes from Martin, applies to you, whether you actually write stuff or create videos or make music or art or what have you. Speaking of writings, we have breaking news because Martin has been doing the thing this week. So tell us all about it.
There's not really a whole lot to tell if I'm brutally honest. Managed to get a very small amount of work done on my fantasy novel.
Well done.
Any progress is progress. That's the way I'm looking at it.
Indeed. And our live studio audience would applaud right now if we had a live studio audience, but we don't because let's just plug Anchor again because they're pretty cool,
Yep,
allowing
absolutely.
us to record this podcast like we were sitting across the table from each other, which we are definitely are not.
I know. It's got to be said that it's been done with the, it's been achieved actually with the minimum of technical difficulties. The few we've had, I think, mostly down to just like connection issues and things like that, which were more on our end rather than Anchor.
Yeah, definitely. And so yeah, we love Anchor and they deserve all the praise.
Yes, and
So
we're
yeah.
definitely not actually being paid to say that. I mean, believe me, we'd be really happy if we were, but we're
Yeah.
not.
Anchor, if you want to pay us, just feel free.
Yeah,
It's
that'd be nice.
writering.podcast@gmail.com. So, send us an email. And the listeners, send us an email and tell us what you think, because we would love to know what you would like. But back to
Yeah.
Martin, you've been writing.
I have, yes. Shock horror. It's only taken 7 weeks. Well, 7 weeks that I've been talking to you and talking to the our greater audience out there, but quite a few more before that. This is kind of a big thing for me because where a lot of other authors are able to, if they hit a particular part of their story where they don't know how to phrase what they want, or they don't quite know what to put in there, they'll just put in some filler text and then carry on. I can't do that. I don't know why. My brain will not let me. But I can't just put in some filler text. I can't just move on and write the next bit. Because I have to do things in the order that I can picture them in my brain. So there's just been one particular section. I had no idea what I was doing with it. I had no idea how to actually put in what I wanted to put in. ended up sitting down, you know, with my computer. My partner was in the same room, and I just spoke to her and I said, "Look, yeah, this is the issue I've got. I've got no idea how to continue." And she just gave me some advice and said, "You know, I think you're overthinking things," and I do that a lot. So, yeah, eventually I just kind of thought, I kind of am, actually. I don't need to put in something really dramatic happening. Otherwise, it's too much drama in one section. And finally got some work done. So, momentous occasion.
Good on you. That's kind of a good general advice is, you know, it's kind of a kind of funny thing, you know. It's a bit of an annoyance sometimes, you know, when you know when you're depressed and people tell you that, you know, just cheer up. Oh, why didn't I think of that before? You know, when you try to solve a problem it always helps to try your best to simplify things and just take it as cliche as that sounds, one step at a time, you know, just
yeah definitely.
It's always the generally I don't think that the path of least resistance is a good idea as a general rule, but since, you know, in writing and in pretty much any type of creation, you are not bound by your first draft ever.
So, absolutely,
you know, you can just have it have it simple, have it bad. I read somewhere that the first drafts are supposed to be bad, but they are also supposed to be written.
Yes, that is very true. But it just felt really good to actually finally make any kind of progress on the story when, you know, it's the only story where I've had all the major plot points lined up in my brain for a very long time now. So it's really annoying having all these ideas, knowing how they're supposed to line up and not being able to write them because of all the tiny little minutiae that kind of blocks up my brain sometimes.
Exactly. I have a similar problem when I have something in my head and I want to put it on paper, and obviously it's not that simple ever. And I get hung up not on the structure, not on the flow, not on the rhythm. I get hung up on one word, and I can't find the word I'm looking for, and I spend a day and a half looking for the right word, and I cannot progress without it. I mean, I could, yeah, practically speaking, but no, I can't.
Yeah, I've had similar experiences, just being blocked by a single word or a single sentence or something so unbelievably tiny, and it just becomes so frustrating because you can't get it right.
Yeah, and it's so funny
it's our rampant perfectionism. That's what it is.
I don't think perfectionism is bad. I think it's bad when it's when it's an enemy of
progress,
getting things done, and not necessarily progress. I mean, I don't think it's black and white. I don't think it's you have to go forward no matter what, because, you know, sometimes you don't have to go forward no matter what. Sometimes you have to take the right steps, and, you know, if that works for someone, more power to you. But yeah, it's it can be an annoyance more than anything.
Yeah, definitely.
It's so funny that you mentioned that it feels so good to to get back into it and to write, because, you know, we are obviously writers. We do this because we enjoy it. Otherwise, you know, what the hell is the point? It's not like it's not a traditional fast track for money and fame and what have you. So obviously it has to feel good, and I had a similar experience, although not in fiction, because I'm woefully behind on my fiction work, but as a writer, I'm also a working writer, and I have a technical client now, and I really enjoy it, but I also procrastinate a lot. It's kind of part of the process, you know, just having things brew in my head and until they are good and ready to come out. But every time I sit down and start writing a blog post, it feels so good, and I'm reminded how much I actually enjoy the process of writing. It's not about the topic, it's not about the format, it's not about the medium. It's just sitting down and clanking along on the keyboard. That's such an awesome feeling.
That's the thing. It's not just making progress with what you're working on. Sometimes it's just the process itself. Just the actual act of writing is just. It's a very almost cleansing experience. You feel so bunged up for so long when you can't write, and then you just get some words down, and it just feels so much better. You just feel like you can relax again.
I know that we are supposed to be wrapping up our copyright series, and we will talk about that. But at the same time, I was thinking about topics for our future episodes, and one of the topics was motivation and inspiration, and kind of how that relates to, and how that actually distorts what being a writer is. Because ultimately, I think, you know, if you don't enjoy the process, if you don't have that kick, have that high from just sitting down and putting words to paper, it's no amount of inspiration or motivation will help you ever.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's kind of the I think that's the mark of the writer, if I can be so poetic, that really defines who we are and what we do, rather than, you know, copies sold or novels finished or published or whatever. It's that's another layer. You know, you're an author when you're published. You are a professional writer when you paid for something with the money that you got from writing. And but you are a writer when you have to write, when you just have to, because that's what makes you happy, that's what makes you relaxed.
Absolutely.
And I think I still think, you know, beyond that, it's a worthy thing, because there's so much of these inspirational quotes and whatnot going around on social media that are superbly popular in writing circles, and I found that, especially of late, I much more prefer the memes that are not about, you know, we do our share of, you know, joking about procrastinating and not writing.
Yeah, we do.
But at the same time, I enjoy like memes and jokes that are based in, you know, in puns or just clever use of language and subverting expectations with language, rather than, you know, yeah, I'm right or I don't write.
Yeah, absolutely. It's always good to find things that are just a bit more interesting than the standard kind of jokes.
Yeah,
because obviously the standard jokes do get thrown around a lot, so they become a bit tired after a while.
And, you know, repetition can be, you know, can be used for good effect at humor. We are funny as hell. We are hilarious. Frankly, we are hilarious, and all our jokes are, you know, amazing. But yeah, it's I think it's also, you know, it's interesting, and at the same time it's distorting, because especially for new writers coming in, that becomes the norm, that, you know, they are just they are not even trying, which is, I think, important. But yeah, that was some writering we did.
Yes.
In the last 15 minutes or so.
Absolutely.
Good job.
Yeah, congratulations, everybody. Another applause track just there.
Yes. I have to find a laugh track for our jokes, and I have to find an applause track for, you know, just general usage. Like we said, we are at the end of a four-part series now about copyright, and I've been diving into copyright, history of copyright, and the current state of copyright.
I just want to say, this is the first I've heard that it's actually an official series here. It was a bunch of episodes that were loosely connected.
Well, that's a series, you know.
Maybe to you.
We talked about this. We would do a couple of episodes about copyright, and, you know, I figured that constitutes a series, you know.
Yeah, well, anyway, just get on with it.
Yesterday, as of the time of this recording, yesterday, the European Parliament rejected, and I don't have the... numbers in front of me, but I think 318 to 200 and something, so with quite a margin, the latest draft for the EU copyright directive, or whatever it's called, which is a timely coincidence for us. We didn't plan this around it, but it just happened to be yesterday. And we figured we would talk about copyright as it applies to us writers, because obviously this is a huge thing and it covers everything. The copyright protects artistic expression, which is an interesting and important distinction. But any creator, any creative person is protected by copyright. And like we said earlier, I think I said that it's a huge clusterfuck of nonsense these days. And the EU have been trying to overhaul the copyright laws and set up a fairly modern understanding of what copyright is and what it covers and how it does it. But obviously, industry lobbyists try to shift power to corporations and publishers who hold most of these copyrights through deals with authors in exchange for, you know, short-term economic gains, known as down payments in writing circles. And the internet kind of stood up Wikipedia pages went dark, and a lot of prominent people weighed in, and the EU is finally rejected it, so it goes back to committee and they are redrafting it. But it's a good opportunity for us, after I talked about this for 5 minutes without interruption, to examine what is copyright, and because there's a lot of misconceptions and a lot of misunderstandings. Copyright is good. Let's just state that. Copyleft is better, I think personally. But copyright is important because we do a lot of work, and the economic value of that work is rarely reflected proportionally. Copyright helps that. Copyright helps tries to balance the work put in with the value we get. So, do you know the history of the copyright, Martin? Please say something. Let's not make this a Greg episode.
Well, as I said to you, possibly yesterday or possibly a couple of days ago via Twitter, through which we do all of our communications these days, I know next to nothing about this entire topic. So I genuinely don't feel like I have much to weigh in with here. You say I'm the smart one, but I really don't understand where you get that from. I'm not.
yeah, you are. So the whole thing is fascinating, and I spent most yesterday and today trying to cut down the interesting parts, because I have pages upon pages of notes and quotes and resources and whatnot.
Now, are we going for a dictionary definition of interesting or your definition of interesting?
It's fascinating. It's fascinating because it's huge. And it starts with censorship, and it starts with control. And that's I think it's a fascinating thing, because copyright, as it's understood now, it's a negative right. As in, it doesn't give rights to people, but rather forbids most people from doing certain things.
It does seem that is the general understanding of copyright, is that stop people doing things.
Yeah,
and that in itself is it's taken to be negative in the fact that it stops people doing things, but what it stops people doing is positive, if you get my drift.
Mm-hmm.
Let me know if I make no sense whatsoever.
So what was interesting to me is that copyright started as a way for the church and the way for the ruling class, kings and queens and what have you, to control knowledge and to control thought, and especially it became relevant when book printing became a thing, and it was used to control and monopolize how people got their worldview, and increasingly we are it feels over the and then around the time of the French Revolution, all the parts of the world started to shift this into protection and economic value of authors or whoever held the copyright, which as time went on, the practice became that authors rarely own their copyright. It became a property of publishers and whatnot through deals. But it is really interesting that from where we started with copyright, we are arrived at the same place, except, you know, it's not the church and not the ruling class, but it's corporations and larger and different larger organizations with different objectives than the original authors, and that's an interesting cycle. And that's why when I was researching copyright, and I'm by default a huge proponent of copyleft, like Creative Commons, because that's a positive right. That's the author of something saying that you are allowed to copy or remix or share or what have you, as long as you credit or it's non-commercial or whatever.
So just to clarify something for those of us who may have never actually heard the term before, that including myself and any of our wider listeners who haven't come across it. When you say copyleft, are you actually talking about an actual thing, and it's not just a joke about copyright?
It is kind of a joke, but it started as a joke, as an opposite of copyright, but it came to be understood as the next step in copyright law, as in it's a license that, because it's important to know that copyright is automatic, and it always originates with the author. So there, when you write something down, anything at any time, that's copyrighted.
Huh.
There's no registration. That you, basically. Well, if it comes to that you have to prove it, obviously it helps if you have something in place, but as long as that's not an issue, it's copyrighted from the inception. So copyright is yours, and then through practices beyond any practicality whatsoever these days, copyright is being transferred to publishers and other entities other than the author itself, to allow for distribution of the work, and copyleft is. For me, it's really interesting because it doesn't transfer the right from the author, but gives a limited license to other people to use the work. And I think that's a much more practical and much more applicable thing to do in 2018 when most things are digital and most things are...
Yeah. Yeah, I can actually see how something like copyleft would actually tie into what we've been talking about over the last couple of weeks, especially with things like fan fiction and things like that. It allows more people to interact with creative work that's put out by other authors and other artists and musicians, people like that. It allows the people who ingest, I believe would be the right word, people who actually ingest that kind of all the mediums that they listen to and they read and things, it allows them to actually interact with it in a much more free way, I believe.
Exactly. Without damaging the author's economic interests. And that's kind of the kicker, is that the economic interest is in the old system, or in the original copyright paradigm. It always lies with the copyright. It's tied to whoever holds the rights, makes the economic value from it. Whereas in copyleft, with a Creative Commons license, I can sell whatever my short story or whatever and make money off of it. And other, if I allow others to use it commercially, they can, I don't know, make a sequel, make a prequel, make a radio play or whatever, all without worrying that it would hurt me, because, you know, there is an attribution clause. There is, you know, I can say that, hey, it has to be non-commercial, and it's done with. There's no conflict between the different interpretations. So that's kind of what I think after this, and I'm by far not an expert, and I probably should have said this at the beginning, but I will put it in the show notes that, you know, we are not lawyers. This episode does not constitute legal advice. Please, you know, find a lawyer if you are curious about copyright.
But if you want to pay us for legal advice, then that could possibly be arranged. I can't guarantee that the advice will be any good, but by all means, feel free to pay us for it.
Yeah, definitely. You know, pay us for legal advice. We will give you stuff that's both legal and advice. Not necessarily, you know, in connection with each other, but still. Actually, there are. Copyright is such a huge deal, and it's such a crumbling system that there are many, many copyright lawyers who are so fed up with the way lawmakers just cannot catch up to what people want, that they are offering free advice. There's plenty of them on Twitter and in blogs and basically whatever field you're interested in, because, you know, every artistic field or discipline has its own specific niche of copyright, but you know, different kind of precedents and different kind of rulings over the years and decades, but there are plenty of legal advice for free out there, so I highly recommend looking for it.
Yeah, absolutely. The joys of the internet, the information is there if you need to find it.
Yes. And the other thing is, when I was going through the whole thing, this kind of historical cycle that we are where we began jumped at me. And the other is that it's kind of a vicious cycle. So we will never solve this by adjusting the existing perspective of copyright. As what we could do is kind of say that this is the line in the sand, and from here on in, let's use something different, something new, and that could be something built on the whole copyleft movement. And another thing that copyleft does right is that it's worldwide. Copyright is always territorial. Believe it or not, there is no such thing as a global copyright. It is always, there are plenty of, you know, international treaties, and but those, you know, those have to be signed, those have to be honored, and whatever politician decides to, you know, withdraw from it, you know, if they have the political strength, they can. Without getting too political, I mean, Trump withdrew from the Paris Agreement, and you know, climate change didn't go away. So most of the structure, the legal structure around copyright, is very unstable. There are international treaties, and even they lay down guidelines. They are not, you know, they are not rules that have to be followed. Most local legislation follows them, obviously, but copyright is always territorial. And I think that territorial frameworks have no place in 2018. I mean, name one thing that you know, that you create as a creative person that isn't, that your intent isn't to make it available to anyone who would want to buy it. Why would you, you know, limit it to a small amount of the market when you, you know, when you have access to the whole?
It doesn't really make sense still, does it?
Yeah. And you know, territorial laws always differ, and you know, even legal practices differ from country to country. I mean, in the UK and in the US, you have common law. In places like Hungary, we have a different approach to laws and regulations. So, like I said, it's a clusterfuck. And unifying that is actually sorely needed and highly beneficial. So I'm fully in support of the EU directive in that respect, because even though it's not global, it's still better than, you know, have every country have their own separate copyright framework. That said, I think copyleft does it even better, simply because it's worldwide. It doesn't care about jurisdictions. It doesn't care about whatever. It just recognizes that, you know, Creative Commons licenses or simply work wherever. They don't have
as you said, having some. It just makes a lot more sense in such a digital age.
Yeah, exactly. And another interesting thing is that copyright is always defined as something can only be copyrighted if it's in a fixed form, which, you know, it has been interpreted in a modern context, obviously, but it still uses some arcane language that makes no sense in a digital world. Well, you can create novels without ever having a physical copy made. Mm-hmm. And
especially with the rise of ebooks and things like that.
Yeah,
now,
yeah, exactly. And we haven't even reached the peak of, you know, like interactive novels. And that's another thing that that copyright law isn't prepared to deal with is the rise of new media, because there's an interesting debate, or not debate, but an interesting phenomena in copyright, which is copyright only protects a particular expression of an idea. It doesn't protect the idea. So you can copyright a story. You can only copyright a particular rendition of a story. You can't copyright a character or a name or, you know, what have you. You can only copyright the particular expression that you made. And I think that's... that limits a lot of application or understanding of applying copyright to to something like an interactive novel? Like, how do you protect a story when the story changes?
Interesting point.
And that's another, you know, that's another thing that Creative Commons protects the work itself. It's, you know, it doesn't concern itself with you know, is it the story that it's, you know, no, it's, you know, you define the work as it is. You know, it's an interactive novel, then it's an interactive novel, and it's covered. It doesn't, you know, it doesn't have to be, you know, it doesn't have to be complicated. Like we talked about, you know, simplifying things. It's simple and it's clean. It has plenty of legalese, obviously, in a Creative Commons license, but there's a lot of really interesting stuff about copyright. Like there are plenty of stuff I was surprised to learn in the U.S. copyright law that makes more sense than what I found around the EU, which was frankly surprising because I thought the U.S. copyright law is worse. But the idea of like joint authorship or the separation of usefulness from artistic expression is I think are really interesting stuff, because for it, like in the US you cannot copyright useful articles, which is fun, because usefulness has to be the idea, if I understood it, is that usefulness has to be in the public domain. Usefulness have to be free and available to everyone, which I think is a good notion.
Yeah, who would ever think that that's a bad thing? If it's useful, make it available to everyone.
But at the same time, you know, it's not necessarily that evident to everybody. People think that they can copyright like a blog post, an informative or useful article, that's just, you know, like at least in the US, that's just not true. And that means that, for example, one of the most objected parts of this new EU directive was that publishers or copyright holders, in any event, could forbid people from quoting sections other than that they decide can be quoted from an article because it's under copyright, has to pay link tax to link back, which makes absolutely no sense. I mean, why would anyone want to limit the amount of exposure other people give you? I couldn't wrap my head around. But still, you know, if it's only artistic expression, then the usefulness is in public domain. That means that scientific articles and all those things have to be public and free and available, which is a good thing.
Yeah, it's a much better way of doing things.
Yeah, and because of this, I think the technical term is the idea versus expression dichotomy, or something like that. This idea that copyright can only protect a particular expression, it cannot protect the idea, is one thing that's really interesting, because it lives on the edge between legality and social usefulness or social issues, or not issues, the social context of art, is that if both of us come up with the same idea, the same story, the same plot, who has the copyright? Because, you know, if we are independently came to the same thing, and mathematically it's, you know, it's more than possible, then what happens? And that kind of circumvents this debate, because the idea may be the same, but that's not protected anyway. And there's this called the threshold of originality, which interestingly mostly exists in the Western copyright systems, not so much in other places. Again, territorial laws are by nature stupid, because we all live in the same place. But, you know, it's used to decide, and it's a judgment call. It's used to decide, you know, if something is stealing from another person, or something is a copyrightable work on its own. And, you know, that's, you know, the phrase "steal like an artist." It's not stealing, you know. But for a long time, it's kind of obsolete now. But for a long time, people judges and legal professionals try to demand that anything that's copyrighted must demonstrate an amount of creative work or creativity in it. So, you know, copying someone's paper is obviously stealing, but rewriting someone's paper and making it a different paper is actually something that might be allowed. And I was wondering, how would you react if someone took your book and rewrote it?
I think I'd be a bit hurt, to be honest. I worked for about 12 years on that book, thank you very much, and you're just coming along thinking, no, let's rewrite this.
And that's kind of the thing, that you are perfectly right to be hurt, and I would too if I had a book, which I don't have. At the same time, you kind of have to as a whole, if we are talking not about isolated cases like somebody rewriting your book, but the ability of rewriting anyone's book. And that's kind of the whole idea between remixes, is that I take something that wasn't mine and make it I'm not talking about better or worse, just different, and continuing it or just, you know, just rearranging it even, and which is like kind of like hip hop music. I was watching a Fatman on Batman podcast episode on YouTube, and Mark Bernardin was very smart. He said that hip hop music is like that. You know, it takes stuff that you heard before and put it together in a way that you never imagined it was possible, and that's something new. And, you know, that's on a whole, I think it's good, and it has to be protected, because that's an entry into creativity that otherwise wouldn't exist if strict copyright would have its place. But instead of, you know, outright denying it or outright allowing it, what if you could decide, you know, hey, I allow remixing my stuff, or I don't pull out. So that's, you know, that's kind of the gist of the whole thing, is that copyright is good because it protects us, protects our economic value that we get for our work.
That's still room for improvement.
Yeah, but that said, it also has to it has to allow new people to come in and make our stuff better, even if we don't like it. And that cannot be a justification that I don't like it, because, you know, you and I may have our objections, somebody else rewriting our stuff. But that's nothing compared to when it's a corporation that can do something about it and just make it impossible for I don't know, new music to happen or new writing to be done. Because at some point we are going to have everything copyrighted under the...
There'll never be anything original ever again.
Exactly. And that's why copyright is such a hot topic these days. And that's why it's such an important topic these days, because it becomes, as technology and creativity surpassing the legal possibilities, it becomes overreacting to it and starting to get defensive about it, will eventually make for stricter regulations, which eventually make for less less entries into the field, which I don't think is anyone in anyone's best interest, because we need art, and
absolutely,
yeah, and yeah, that's kind of the points I wanted to raise about copyright and some interesting tidbits. I'm not sure how useful that was for anyone.
It provided an interesting talking point, though.
Talking point, as in, you know, grab talking. I apologize. I can sum up this whole thing in one sentence. I really can, and that makes me sad that I spent 45 minutes or so talking about it, which can be said in one sentence, which is, you know, use Creative Commons licenses because they are awesome.
Yeah, it may just be, you may have summed it all up in one sentence, but it doesn't really, yeah, get into the heart of the matter. I'm thoroughly confused by the heart of the matter, and I may have drifted off once or twice throughout your
very large spiel.
And it may entirely be the case, although I'm not admitting to anything, that at least one particular point, I literally had no idea what you were talking about.
Rarely anyone does.
I'm not admitting to anything. It could be the case. It might not.
But that's also my secondary point, is that...
You're talking again? Oh, dear God.
No, this is going to be very, very short. It's that... that's precisely my secondary point, is that nobody really understands, because it's a chaos. And nobody knows why it's good. Nobody knows why how it's being applied now is bad, and nobody knows nobody understands really the ramifications of the changes that we make to it. So it would be important, and that would be my overall advice, is that, yeah, use Creative Commons licenses. And you know, if anybody, it's a fascinating topic. Educate yourselves. look into read the publisher contract, know exactly what kind of rights you are signing over, because it can be disastrous in the long term, and it's just bad idea to give up important rights in exchange for short-term economic value. But yeah, we need to understand copyright or we will never make it better. And the more, you know, the more people understand it, the more people look into it after a rant like mine, the better. So yeah, that's about it, and I will shut up now.
Well, it is a very valid point, though, and I'm sure that there'll be a great number of people who listen to us who will have actually understood more of what you were talking about than I did.
Even if it just sits in the back of your head, and you know, when you remember it at the right moment, that's useful, hopefully. And I didn't just waste anyone's time, especially yours.
I don't think my time's wasted.
So that concludes our episode for this week. Next week we are going back, to more grounded writeringy things with Martin. Speaking more, as you know, the smarter and more right-wingy of the two of us. What did we decide? Next week we are talking about the software and the kind of the platforms and what?
Yes, something along those lines. I don't know. Yeah. We had that about 4 or 5 weeks ago. I can't remember now.
Yeah. What are you using for writing?
Generally, I'm using OpenOffice.
That's, you know, that's one level better than Word. Microsoft Word, obviously, the bane of my existence. But yeah, there's a lot of pros and cons. Maybe we will talk about those, or you know, if we find something much more practical and much more useful for you, dear listeners, then we will talk about that. And I will go back to my duck house now. Martin, do you want to do the honors of saying goodbye and doing the housekeeping? Just so it's not only my voice on this episode.
As usual, all the relevant information, links as to our Twitters, which we are both very very active on, they will be in the show notes. There will also be the Writeringers podcast account Twitter on there as well. Links to both of my books, because I'm the only one out of the two of us who actually has any out at the moment. And Greg, will there be any other links or anything that you'd be putting in there?
There will be, I hope, a lot of links. Maybe not a lot of links, just some starting points. But yeah, everything relevant and or interesting will be in the show notes.
Fantastic. So yeah, by all means, drop us a line or drop us several lines or get in touch with us however you like. We do also have a podcast email, which I believe is writerings.podcast@gmail.com. So get in touch with us by any means necessary. We'd love to hear your thoughts. We'd love to hear your feedback. Any ideas you've got for future topics to talk about, we would love to hear those as well. And if you do have Anchor yourself, Anchor does actually allow you to leave voice messages to us as well, so that'd be even more fantastic. We can actually hear the voices of the people who get bored to oblivion by us droning on for nearly an hour every week.
Us, that's so nice of you to say us. Yeah, if you think you have a gift of the I'm bored or shut up that I haven't seen before, send them my way. If you send us a voicemail, there is a chance that we will put it in the episode and answer your questions. So, you know, ask away.
Absolutely. We'd love to hear your thoughts. And apart from that, I believe that's covered everything. I believe it just remains to say thank you, everybody, for listening to us. And we shall once again talk to you next week. Bye-bye.
Bye.